Take your Bibles and open up to the book of Exodus. We'll spend most of our time, actually I think all of our time today, looking at this particular text. We started, I guess back in January, looking monthly, we're just taking a month here or a Sunday here and there, and just looking at some family roles, from some family things. For those visiting with us, you're coming in, you know, 4 months into this or so, or we have talked about, we looked at the work of the wife. We looked at the love of a husband. We looked at the obedience of children. We looked at the training of parents. And so all those other lessons, those other four that we've looked at, they're on the website for those visiting, or for those of you that might not have been here for those, go back and find those. We were looking at just various relationships and various roles that we have one with another. But I want to look today. What about the in-laws? This is a little different than the other ones because there's not a lot of text. There's not a lot to look at concerning this. And it's almost become a joke, hasn't it? You know, when you say, oh, the in-laws, do we smile or do we frown? There's a lot of jokes. Oh, yeah, behind every successful man, very surprised mother-in-law. And we could very well be maybe one of the most neglected part of family relationships. And I'll just ask the question. When's the last time you heard it preached on? I'll ask the question again. Have you ever heard it preached on? Because I know I've never done it. This is new for me. I don't know that I've ever heard one. I certainly have never done it myself. Shame on me. So we're going to do that today. It'll be a little different than those others, because those others, God speaks a lot about the children and parent relationship. There is a lot about the husband-wife relationship. In-laws are indeed mentioned, but there's not a lot of ins and outs about that. There's not a lot about, not a lot of instruction. We just know that it was, that they understood the same relationship. So we're going to look at that today as we do our monthly family study. There's not a lot said. We do have the situation with Ruth. We could have looked at that. Instead, I want us to look at the relationship Moses had with his father-in-law, Jethro. And before we get to that, and we're going to spend most of our time, by the way, at Exodus 18. That's where we're going to, that's the text we're going to spend our time at, making applications. Again, unlike those other relationships we have studied, where God had a lot to say about roles, and there's not a lot said about that, but there's, in Exodus 18, there is a lot of applications that we can make. Most of us in this room are in-laws of some form or fashion. Everyone married is an in-law. Everyone who has children who is married is an in-law. Everyone who has, our families just branch out. They get bigger. And so how do we have harmony with that? It's a horrible thing when families aren't able to treat each other properly. And when relationships are hard and it affects everybody. Not just the ones that are knee-deep in it, but it trickles down to others who see it and who are influenced by that. So there's a lot to learn in Exodus 18. We're going to spend our time there and apply it however it applies. Everyone in here is an in-law to some form or fashion. Okay. We're talking about Moses and Jethro. That would have been a father-in-law, son-in-law. Apply it however it applies, because the lessons are there for us. But before we get to that, let's get some background. Just as good a reminder. They meet each other in Exodus chapter 2. Moses has left Egypt for fear of life. He's a fear for his, that he's going to be taken and killed. And so he runs. As he is doing that in verse 16, the priest of Midian, that's Jethro. That's the father-in-law. He's called Reuel here. He will be called Jethro in the other text. The priest of Midian had 7 daughters. They came and drew water, and they filled troughs with water for the father's flock. And shepherds came and drove them away. Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. So that's the meeting. Kind of a nice story, isn't it? Here are these 7 daughters of Jethro. They're there doing evidently one of their chores. That's what they did. They came and they got the water. And on this day, it had a bunch of jerks show up. And you've got these shepherds, and they're not very nice. And they see a bunch of females. And so they jump in front, get out of the way. And Moses, for whatever reason, we can see providence here. Moses is there. And Moses stands up for them. Moses fixes this for them. And he doesn't let them get jumped. He takes care of them, defends them. And in verse 18, they get back home a lot quicker than they normally do. When they came to Reuel, their father, he said, "How is it that you're back so soon?" Evidently, it took them a lot. When once Moses started helping them, he evidently a little faster, maybe a little stronger, whatever. He gets it done quicker. And so they show up, and the dad notices that. "You're home a lot faster. What happened?" They tell him the story. Verse 19. "An Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds. He drew water for us and watered the flock. And he said to his daughters, 'Where is he? Did you leave him behind?'" It's like, "Are you kidding me? This guy did that for you? You didn't bring him home? You didn't bring him home so we can feed him and thank him? Go get him." And they bring him home. And there's the introduction. So, young guys in here, it does well to make a good first impression. There's an application for us. You never know when you're meeting your father-in-law, mother-in-law, son-in-law, daughter-in-law. What you never know when you're meeting them for the first time. And here's, where is he? Go get him. They get him, they bring him home, and you know the rest of the story. Verse 21, Moses was content. He dwelt there with the man. Zipporah, his daughter, Jethro's daughter, becomes his wife. And Moses goes through what probably would be called maybe the most peaceful time of his existence. In chapter 3, verse 1, Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law. He becomes the shepherd for the family. Moses' life is real interestingly laid out in 40-year periods. There's the 40-year period in Egypt. There's the 40-year period that begins right here where he's in Midian shepherding for the family. Then there's that 40-year period when he goes back to Egypt and he starts the wandering period. He starts the road with Israel, getting them to Canaan. Here's a period of his life. He now is married. He begins to have children. He's a shepherd. You know, sheep don't talk back. And sheep aren't trying to hang you up and put you on death row like where he was running from Egypt from. Here's a peaceful time in his life that ended when he sees a bush burning off in the distance. And he gets busy with the sheep and he looks at the thing still burning. He's still burning. And God had a work for him. Look in chapter 4. Now Moses had to argue it out. "Oh, no, I don't talk well enough. Nobody will believe me. I won't know what to say." But no, you're going. Look how Moses handles that. Verse 18 of chapter 4. Moses went and he returned to Jethro, his father-in-law. And he said to him, "Let me go, I pray you, and return to my brethren who are in Egypt and see whether they be alive." And Jethro said to Moses, "Go in peace." And the Lord said to Moses in Midian, "Go, return to Egypt, for all the men are dead which have sought your life." Moses took his wife and his sons, and off they go. They leave on good terms. Moses doesn't sneak off in the middle of the night. He doesn't sneak out of Dodge. He goes and he tells him, "I need to go." Because father-in-law's got to find another shepherd now. And the family's now going to have to make some rearrangements But he does it. And he does it up front. He does it face to face. He does it eyeball to eyeball. He leaves on good terms. And so the family leaves. Now at some point that we don't have the full story of it. Interesting thing happens with the circumcision through the rest of the chapter. But at some point, Zipporah and the sons come back home. We don't know why. We can suppose. We can maybe get some good guesses. You know, maybe Moses is a fear for their life. Maybe out of the danger of the situation he's fixed to put himself in. Maybe he doesn't want them involved. We don't know. But they're not there for all of this, apparently. And so they go back to Jethro. And then all the stuff that we really know about Moses happens. We might not know. I would guess that in an audience this big, there might have been some who didn't even know who his father-in-law was. But they know what happens when chapter 5 begins. And we've got his work in Egypt. So he has left Midian. He's gone back to Egypt. Let my people go. Who's your people? Who's your God? Who is this Lord you're talking about? And then a 10-step process took place to let them know exactly who God was. Who is the Lord? He's the one that can turn the water to blood. He's the one that can put frogs and lice anywhere and everywhere. Oh, he's the one that can put you in a cemetery. As a matter of fact, you're going to be there tomorrow burying your firstborn. That's who the Lord is. And Moses leads them out through the Red Sea. They now make their way to Mount Sinai. They are now in. This is when the reunion happens. Come to chapter 18, which is now. This is where we're gonna spend our time. In chapter 18, all of that has happened. The plagues have happened. The Red Sea has happened. The journey to Mount Horeb has happened. And in chapter 18, the family reunites. Now again, through chapter 5 through chapter 18, when was it that Zipporah and the children came back? We're not told of that. We just know that they did. That's necessarily inferred because they now return to him. And you can't return from if they never left. And so now we have this reunion. And so let's just look through chapter 18 and look at some applications we can make for ourselves. When Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard all that God had done for Moses and for Israel, his people, and that the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her back. So they are now going to meet the campsite. They are now making their way to where Israel has camped, and he's bringing the family with them. And we're about to see how these men interact with one another. And it's really interesting. We have seen Moses. Most of what we see with Moses in the chronology of his life, and we have there's a lot said about his life. And a lot of what we see about Moses' life is public. We see how he behaved in front of Pharaoh. We see how he behaved as leader of the people. We see him in public roles. We're about to see him in a private setting. And you don't see a lot of the private stuff with Moses. Most of his is public. But what we're going to see is there was no difference. Public or private, he was the same man. And that's a wonderful trait. And there's another application for us. There's a lot of public figures that when private things come out, when they're laid open, changes a lot of things. For those of you that are football fans, you think Les Miles understands that? For those of you that are politician fans, do you think Mr. Cuomo understands that? There's a lot of public people. Privately, not exactly, the images don't exactly match. With Moses, it does. Pick up with me in verse 5. Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife to Moses in the wilderness, where he encamped at the Mount of God. And he said unto Moses, I, your father-in-law Jethro, am come to you, and your wife and her two sons. And Moses went out to meet his father-in-law, and he bowed, and he kissed him. And they asked each other of their welfare. And then they came into the tent. And that's kind of interesting. They came into the tent. We get to see Moses and Jethro's meeting. We get to see the respect. We get to see the appreciation. We get to see the relationship and how much they felt for one another. And then it says they went into the tent. You know, we don't get to see that with Moses and Zipporah. We don't get to see that with Moses and his sons. The reunion kind of left behind closed doors. Can you imagine what it would have been like? You imagine how excited he is to see his father-in-law, how much more so he should be to see the rest of his family. And yet here's Jethro, who, public or private, we don't know much at all about Jethro. We just read those few verses earlier. We don't know much about him at all until right now. But we see how Moses responded to him. And is there somebody that you respect? You say, you know, if I know this person, and if they love that person, then I love them too. Moses treats this man in a way that tells us a lot about both of them. Here's Jethro. We're going to see a little bit more about him in just a moment. But here's this noble man. And here's this devout man. And here's an affectionate man. And here's a considerate man. And Moses shows him respect and courtesy, I guess would be the word. No blame shed on anything. No jealousy. Back in verse 1, I should have emphasized this earlier, when it talks about he had heard about all that Moses had become. Think about that. Moses is a pretty big deal. Would we agree to that? He goes to Pharaoh and he stands up against what that time would have been the strongest emperor of the strongest power on earth, and he just went face to face with him. And he's now the unquestioned leader of what best estimates are could have been as much as 2 million people. And there's no jealousy. Jethro doesn't approach him any differently. That's a wonderful reunion. And this is what I hope we would want our families to be. This is what I hope we would want our extended families to be. Families are a great blessing. And keeping families together and close, that should be the goal of every in-law. You know, there could very well be some people with a different type heart that if the daughter came back and the grandchildren came back, you know, that'd probably be pretty easy to get used to. Probably be nice to have the grandkids around all the time. And just stay with me, sweetheart. No, he takes them back where they needed to be. And there's this wonderful reunion. And I hope all of us would want that to be our family legacy. What our family tree looks like. And doing things to make sure that's not some pie in the sky thing that just happens. It'll happen because of mindsets like Moses and Jethro. The respect and the love and the appreciation that they show for one another. And in verse 8 through 12, what happens? There's this incredible rejoicing and joy that takes place as they go through the scenario of what took place during the separation. Verse 8, Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done unto Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and all the travail that had come upon them by the way, and how the Lord delivered them. So he just tells them what we know about the plagues. I was there, and I went before Pharaoh, and here's what he said, and here's what he did, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then we cross over, and he's telling the story. Telling them about the weariness, the hardship. And then that last phrase in verse 8, the ultimate deliverance. God was with us. And here's what he did. And here's how he did it. Verse 9, and Jethro rejoiced for all the goodness which the Lord had done to Israel, whom he had delivered out of the hand of the Egyptians. Here's this incredible story. I mean, I think most of us in this room, if you just take a piece of paper, what's your 10 most favorite Bible events? Probably a huge majority in this room would talk about the plagues, the things that happened. That was, even in a book filled with incredible things, that was some incredible things. And now imagine you're hearing it for the first time. And when Jethro hears what all happened, he just bubbling up with joy. And so there's another real quick application. How do families stay close? When there's this union of spiritual things, seeing God's hand in our life, seeing the blessings that God does, seeing the day-by-day deliverance. Obviously nothing to the extent that Moses was delivered from. But if we don't see God's hand in our life, we're just not looking. Or we're stubborn, or we're blind. When there's a family that can rejoice in that together, it Love covers a multitude of sins, doesn't it? It sure does allow for some of those disagreements to not become very big. And they don't have to hang around. They don't have to fester. They don't have to boil over. When we can rejoice in the blessings of God, that's the recipe for a close, united family. In chapter 18, verse 10, he's not just rejoicing. He's not just praising God. In verse 10, Jethro said, "Blessed be the Lord, who has delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians, out of the hand of Pharaoh. He has delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods. For in the things therein they dealt proudly, he has used them." We know earlier that Jethro was a priest of the Midianites. I don't know what all that would have inferred about what he did and what he offered sacrifices to. A priest of Midian, who now makes the statement, "Now I know. After what has just happened, after what you have just endured, after what has just been done and the mighty works of God, I now know." And again, so you've got just this, you've got sacrifices happening, and you've got praise happening, and you've got rejoicing, and you've got this confession of even greater faith. That's the makings of a close family. When one or the other or both can recognize and make changes and acknowledge a change. "Now I know there is one God above all. One God above the rest." And here's this reunion and the joy that would have come from that, from the physical standpoint, that breaks out into rejoicing for spiritual things. It breaks out into praise for God, sacrifices for God. And so another application we can look at it. When Moses was going through those trials and going through those disappointments and the hardships that he went through, we can learn from those. Moses learned from that. Moses became better because of that. And our knee-jerk reaction for the trial and the hardship and get rid of it. We're like Paul, "Get this thorn out of me." But just like Paul, there's lessons to be learned. And our strength is in other ways. And here's Moses going through what he went through stronger and better because of it. Let us learn from that. And then some applications that might help us a little bit more. And that's the tactful way Jethro set Moses down and said, "I think I might can help you here. I see a problem I might give you some advice on." I'm talking generally here. Most of us don't fight fair with our family. We know things about our family nobody else knows. We can twist screws that nobody else at work can twist. We can pop off a scab that the next door neighbors don't know exist. And let's be honest, sometimes we talk to our families like we would never talk to anybody else. We have a disagreement with somebody at work, but we don't talk like we do when we have a disagreement with somebody with the same last name. Sometimes we just don't fight fair. And sometimes because we don't, and sometimes because the way we handle certain things, it puts divides and it puts relationships at strained. And Jethro is now there at the mount. He's now there with those who came out of Egypt, and he just kind of takes it in, and he sees what the typical day for Moses is, and he wants to help him. And so look in verse 13. Look at what Jethro sees. "It came to pass on the morrow that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood by Moses from morning till evening. And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people, he said, what is this thing that you're doing for the people? Why do you sit there alone? All the people standing in line morning to evening." So first of all, he just takes me and says, what exactly is this? You know, I watched this all day, and I watched this cattle trail kind of work their way to you. What are you doing? And what are they doing? Verse 15, "Moses said to his father-in-law, because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a matter, they come to me. I judge between one and another,
and I make them know the statutes of God and of the laws. What are you doing? What is that? Well, everybody who has an issue, they come to me. If there's this issue between these neighbors or this issue with this family, they come to me. I'm kind of like the judge, and they tell me the story, and then I tell them what to do, and I judge it all. I'm the one who tells them how to handle these situations. And in verse 17, you see Jethro trying to help. We've already seen the love that they had, the coming together as they did, the hugging, the kissing, the joy. In verse 17, Moses' father-in-law said to him, "The thing that you're doing is not good. You will wear away both you and the people that is with you. For this thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to perform it yourself alone. Listen to me. Listen to my voice. I'll give you counsel, and then God be with you. But you, for the people to God, that you may bring the causes to God, you will teach them ordinances and laws. You will make them, or you will show them the way wherein they must walk and what they must do. Moreover, you will provide out of the temple able men, those who fear God, men of truth, those who are not covetous. Place them over this. Let them be rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, rulers of tens. Let them judge the people in all these reasons. And it will be that every great matter gets brought to you. But every small matter let them judge. It'll be easier for you, and they'll bear the burden with you." So they love each other. We've seen that. We saw that in the reunion and in the compassion they had for one another. And so what you've got here is you've got a show of concern. You've got a show of sympathy. You've got a show of love. Let me just ask the question. Are you more likely to listen to somebody that you know has your best interest at heart? Are you more likely to listen to somebody who you know has care and concern for you? Because that's what's happening here. You're going to wear yourself out. At this point, remember 40, 40, and 40? By this point, Moses is over 80 years old. He was 80 years old when he saw the burning bush. He went back into Egypt, all the things with the plagues, then the travel down to the mount. Moses is 80 plus. He says, "You're going to wear yourself out. You're going to become weary. You are 80 years old. There's a strain on you. There is a stress on you. And it never ends. Every day the line just gets bigger and the problems are there. Today's problems have been solved. Tomorrow you got another line of them. Let me give you some advice. Split some of this stuff up. You're not the only wise person out of these 2 million or so. Pick out good men. Pick out faithful men. Pick out reverent men. Pick out people who will not make a decision. We're talking about not covetous. Pick out people that won't make a decision on how it's going to impact them. They're honest. They're fair. They're righteous. And let them deal with these things. And if something comes up, and it invariably will, when something comes up that's a little bit above their pay grade, let them then come to you. Let them handle these small knick-knack things. And when something big develops, let them funnel it to you. This one can take care of thousands, and this one hundreds, and this one fifties, and you won't have to deal with that. So what he's doing, another application for us. Let me just ask the question. Does that sound reasonable to you? Is there anything about that that sounds like that's kind of ridiculous? And it couldn't be possibly true that an 80-year-old man could wear himself out? And Jethro is appealing to reason. Not emotion. He's appealing to reason, not force. Do you think there are some father-in-laws who would have handled it a little bit different? Sit down, boy. You listen to me. Let me tell you something. It's so ridiculous. Don't you know any better than this? This is crazy. There's got to be a better way than this. Let me just talk. Application phase. How does browbeating work for you? Is that how you like to be approached? And so do we think others, that's the best way to approach them? Has that ever happened with you? You ever been attacked like that? You ever been, but it's not about reason. It's It's not right. It's hard to consider when in those moments that it's coming from concern. How we handle things, how we approach things, goes a long way on how they're going to be responded to, how they're going to be heeded to. And so here's Jethro with full tact and with concern and with reason. I'm just throwing this out. And then you'll do what you do, but I hope you'll listen to me. And look at verse 23. If you didn't love Jethro yet, you're fixing to. If you do this thing and God commands you to, then you will be able to endure and all these people will go to the place in peace. I love that phrase. He comes to me and says, I'm giving you this advice, but now go ask God. It might be that he doesn't want you to, but if he does, then do it. And so here's, again, another application for us. This is not being done by force. He's offering counsel. He's not demanding. You ever had an in-law demand something out of you? And he's offering counsel. And he says, I think this would work. I'm concerned for you. I'm concerned about your future well-being. I think this would work and be better. But pray about it. Inquire from God about it. And if he's okay with it, why don't you do this? See if it makes life better. See if it makes life easier. And you know what happens? Look in verse 24. Moses hearkened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he said. It was logical. It was reasonable. It came from a position of concern and care and love. And Moses, leader of roughly a couple of million people, not so arrogant he couldn't take advice. Not so proud that he couldn't listen. And so in our families, when the dynamics get crazy, and if there's the love and respect that we saw in that early reunion, if there's God in the midst of it, rejoicing and thankfulness over the praise and the blessings that we have from God, the deliverance on a daily basis. And then there's this giving of advice, taking of advice. You know, many people are afraid to offer advice because of how it might be received or how the lack of how it might be received. But now let's just be honest. If there's more of us like Jethro and Moses, let's just be honest. If I become more like Jethro in giving advice and more like Moses in taking advice, if you become more like Jethro in the giving and more like Moses in the taking, you know what? We'll work out. We'll work out everything. Doesn't mean somebody will change their mind. Doesn't mean somebody's going to water down their convictions. But it means the family's not separated. And it means the relationship isn't strained. And maybe our problem is we're not like them enough. Maybe that's the difference in this family and our family. This family and my family. And then, I don't know how far to carry this, but the last verse of the chapter is, Jethro goes home. That might be the one everybody wants to amen. Yeah, in-laws need to go home. Great visit. Great reunion. Great praise for God. Great sacrifices. Great tears. Great advice. And then verse 27, Moses let his father-in-law depart. And he went his way to his own land. Which takes us back to the advice. Jethro's advice wasn't just from a position of concern. It wasn't just from a position of reason. It was counseling in which he wasn't going to have any benefit out of it. It wasn't like he was working up a scheme. Hey, Moses, I tell you, why don't you get this group here and get this group. And I'll oversee that for you if you like. I'll take that off your hands if you like. He's going home. Regardless of what Moses done with this advice, Jethro's going back to Midian. And so here's counsel that was given that wasn't in some way going to benefit Jethro in any form or fashion. Have you ever had some advice given to you like that? There's some advice given, and it sure does kind of benefit the one given the advice. How receptive are we to that? advice given, and then he left. Counsel given, and then he goes home.
A lot of times with, a lot of times the family dynamic is people don't know their roles. We use that phrase, I'm not sure how long ago it's been, but the cutting of apron strings or the whatever, the cutting of the strings. There's a lot of families never do that. You got mom and daddy who won't let go. Or you got son or daughter married with their own, but won't let go. And it was, you may know, I'll tell this story because it was told publicly. So I don't think it'd be anything wrong telling that. Connie Adams, we got to hear him in a meeting one time long ago. And he was talking about when one of his children married. That might not be the right thing. When they got their house. So there may have been some time before their first house. But anyway, they now have their home. And Connie talked about his wife. Her name was Bobby. And Bobby goes in. And she starts out, glasses need to go right there. That'd be a really good place for your dishes. And Connie said, hey, this is not your house. This is not your kitchen. And that's just an example. Sometimes we just butt in. There is an application to be made, however we might need to apply it. Jethro went home. Wonderful reunion. Wonderful advice. And then he goes. Does nagging, hell, we talked to, does browbeating, is that how you like it? Probably not. Does nagging, is that how you like it? You know what you don't see is Jethro, hey Moses, you need to do this. You know, I told you you need to do that. This is what you need. You ever had any of that? How's that? How you respond to that? I'm guessing we all respond the same way. So if we don't take anything from this, we see a very close relationship here. We see a very respectful, concerned relationship. And we see some things that leads to that when God is in the midst of it. Don't be surprised when there's a close relationship. And when there is tact used, don't be surprised. And then when there is respect used, don't be surprised. And it could be that some of those very things lacking are what might be causing wedges in our own families today. Turn to Romans chapter 12. We're talking about in-laws. And we're talking in this particular case, I understand. You know, the cards were kind of stacked a little bit. These were people that had respect for spiritual things. And I know that that's not how all of our families are. Many of us, if not all of us, have people in our families that are not, they're not spiritually minded. We have people in our family that are not very tactful. We have people in our family that are really good at browbeating and bringing out the sledgehammer. I know that. All we can do is our part. So turn to Romans chapter 12. And understand this. This verse is being used as how brethren are to treat brethren. But apply it in this situation. Romans chapter 12, verse 18. If it be possible, as much as it lies within you, live peaceably with all. Put that in the family dynamic. If there is a family issue, if there's a problem with someone in my family, it better not be me that's making that problem. If there is a problem in your family between whoever, okay, family problems happen, but it better not be because of you. As much as it lies in you. Some things don't lie within us. Some people are just contrary. And some of those people are in our families. Some people are hard-headed. Some of those people are in our families. Some people, the last thing they have is tact and concern. And some of those people are in our families. That doesn't lie within us. As it lies within us, we better be peaceful. There better be Jethro and Moses' character in us. And if all of us do that, there's a lot of family issues. It's going to be a lot better. Get your songbooks out. I know this was different than those other relationships that we've looked at. But hopefully some of these applications have fit, and hopefully some of them can be put into practice. We want our families to be better. God gave us families. They're the closest thing. They're an earthly relationship that lets us know how God feels about us. We are His family. We're His children.
And we have this earthly relationships to give us an idea into that insight. So let's appreciate them. It's been a wonderful day. People back with us. Beautiful spring morning. We got to go into the presence of God, and we talked this morning about what makes that possible. And if you're not a part of God's family, that's why we have families here, but there's a spiritual family. If you're not a Christian, let's just ask a couple of questions. Do you believe by faith that Jesus is the Son of God? Because if you believe by faith, then let that act. Let that lead to something. Let it lead to confessing Him, not just as the Son of God, but as your Lord and Master. Let it lead to repenting of the sins that caused Him to die. Let it lead you into the waters of baptism. Not because you believe there's something magical about it, but because you believe God is a keeper of promises and He promised to wash your sins away. Do that today. Be a part of His family. For those of us that are Christians, maybe we're in the spiritual realm. Maybe we're that bird that's causing trouble. Maybe we're in the spiritual family, but we're the ones that's got things off. Just repent. We still have breath. We still have life. Remember, we studied this morning, Job chapter 12. Breath and life is in God's hands. Thank Him that we still have it. And take advantage of the time that we've got to make it right. We'll help you any way we can. Do it while we stand and sing.